In a high-stakes visit to Washington, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with President Donald Trump twice in 48 hours to push for a fresh ceasefire in Gaza and secure the release of hostages. Trump now reportedly supports a 60-day truce contingent on freeing living captives and returning the remains of those who have been killed. Discussions also touched on U.S.-mediated talks in Doha and a potential shift in U.S. policy towards Iran. Tensions remain high. Israeli airstrikes have not continued, but as quiet progress is reported towards a broader agreement. Sorry about that confusion there. There's a technical hitch here. But joining me on the line is U.S. Attorney John Day with deep expertise in hostage law and international agreements. John, thanks so much for joining us again on The Home Run. What legal leverage does a figure like Trump hold in pressuring both Israel and Hamas towards a hostage-sensitive ceasefire?
Hello, and thanks for having me. What Trump has right now is the leverage coming out of the success of the Iranian attacks, and he's certainly hoping, he was hoping for a big exciting announcement following his visit with Netanyahu. There's nothing that's come out yet, but I think they have some expectations. They've got the Doha negotiations going on. His special envoy is going back and forth with that situation. So his leverage is really the power of the U.S. presidency and the fact that he's got the momentum of his success following the Iranian attacks, and he's hoping for something probably, in his words, big and bold to come out of following up with the meeting with Netanyahu. Mm-hmm. And he got the benefit of a letter of support from Netanyahu for a Nobel Peace Prize.
Do you think that was orchestrated before, or Trump was genuinely surprised?
No, I don't. I think he was probably surprised, but Netanyahu is following in the tracks of other world leaders who understand that flattery gets you everywhere with Trump. And one of the things, he really does have his eyes on the prize, and it literally is the prize that he wants, which is the Nobel Peace Prize. So Netanyahu played it skillfully.
Following, and
that's what Trump loves.
I mean, say what you want about Netanyahu, he certainly is a skilled diplomat. John, you were talking about Trump wanting something big and dramatic to announce, and it's not going to happen now because, from what I understand, their meetings are over. But what would have been something big and dramatic that he could have potentially been hoping for?
Well, the ceasefire, and you know, he's also been pushing for the Gaza relocation, which doesn't have support outside of Netanyahu, but he wanted something that's consistent with what he's been achieving, at least recently, internationally. And so he wanted he was hoping for the announcement of a agreed upon ceasefire. I think they still think that this guy, Steve Witkoff, who's his special envoy, his negotiator, can come up with something. And I'm sure there's things going on that they haven't made public yet, but I don't think Trump's attention span can certainly be short. He generally has sort of a 2-week window of things that he wants to get done, and he's very skillful about navigating and keeping the world's attention on something new every 2 weeks. So I think his goal is to get something at least that he can point to and say, this follows up on the success of Iran.
Well, as you mentioned, the U.S. envoy, Steve Witkoff, is currently working in Doha to narrow the gaps between Hamas and Israel with the latest proposed ceasefire. In your opinion, how does U.S. involvement reshape the chances of a legally sustainable agreement between the two sides?
Well, it's the 900-pound gorilla in the room. I mean, that has all the power. It has all the momentum, and the fact that we haven't heard anything yet, I don't think is indicative of the fact that it's not happening. But I think this is really a priority for Trump and his people. He really wants to get back to the focus on being able to achieve something with the Gaza situation. He's not having the luck that he thought he would have with Ukraine and Putin, and that's a whole different topic and a whole different story. But when his attention shifts from an area that he's not having luck with or success with, I think then he comes back to his power and authority in the Middle East, and he wants to exert that, and he wants to show something, he wants to have something to show for what he's been doing.
What do you think is the stumbling block? Do you think it's Netanyahu? So this idea that Netanyahu jumps when Trump says anything should be questioned, or do you think it's Hamas, that Hamas is actually quite difficult to bring under control and get them to commit to what Trump wants?
I think publicly the Trump people would say it's Hamas. You know, we know that his relationship with Netanyahu has been rocky, good but rocky, and you know, up and down, of course. But I think they're focusing on intransigence by the Hamas negotiators. But at the same time, Trump is—he's always willing to throw his friends under the bus if he needs to get to where he wants to be.
The current proposal reportedly includes releasing around 10 living hostages and the remains of 18 others. From a legal standpoint, how significant is that framework for future negotiations?
Well, it is. It is the foundation for the future. And if they can navigate and negotiate a consistent policy that involves release and, you know, the continued addressing of those issues, then I think that's something that's a priority. Trump has been very keen on accepting responsibility for the success when there are hostages released. He got a lot of accolades when the American Israeli hostage came back, and that was a big deal for him, and it was important for the domestic support here. So it's part of the agenda, and it's a big part. And if they can lay the groundwork for a successful release, especially one that doesn't include the sort of outrageous show that took place in these, you know, by Hamas in the previous releases, I think that's sort of the goal, is to tamp that down and try to have a consistent plan of action.
Netanyahu insists that the truce must include weakening Hamas and demilitarization. How do those non-negotiables line up with international law surrounding ceasefire terms?
Well, I mean, if it's a key part of the platform, and it's something that, you know, whether they can get anywhere close to that in the negotiations remains to be seen. But again, you know, the overall Trump strategy, and again, it's one that has not been embraced, of course, by Europe and other parties, is this relocation, and the only supporters that it has are Trump and Netanyahu. But again, Trump's negotiating style is to start off with these, you know, big policy goals, and he says he's successful when he can negotiate something that's maybe not everything he wanted, but he's using that as a card to play. And even though it's not being well received by the Europeans, of course, and Trump has been saying that the friends of the U.S., like Jordan, for example, are willing to accept relocated people, but it's not something that anyone else has latched on to. So we'll see if these play any part in any kind of a resolution. It may just be it's a card that he's trying to play to draw attention elsewhere.
Netanyahu and Trump met twice in 2 days. Does that indicate that deals are in the making, or does it actually indicate or perhaps undermine accountability for them?
You know, good question. My guess is that they wanted that the multiple meetings are a sign that something's, you know, happening. It's not as if Netanyahu left and there were, you know, private indications that people were unhappy. I mean, generally that would be seen as an indicator that there's some progress somewhere, but it's too early to announce anything.
Israel has confirmed some covert cyber and drone operations that it carried out post-ceasefire to monitor Iranian military rebuilding. Does that or those kind of actions invalidate the ceasefire between Israel and Iran under international humanitarian law?
Right. Well, it depends on whose perspective you're looking at. You haven't seen anything, any sort of outrage indicating that any kind of ceasefire would be void. But those sort of activities are going to have a lot of support privately from the U.S. It's unlikely that there was at least not some communication between the Israeli, the IDF and intelligence, and the Trump administration. But it hasn't reached the level of causing a rift or a dissolution of any of the ceasefire terms. But and I think it has a lot of support actually from Trump and probably European allies.
Mm. John, correct me if I'm wrong, but one thing I can't get my head around is Trump often just acts the way Trump wants to act. And I might be wrong, but it seems that sometimes he's not acting within international law. Is that correct? And if yes, doesn't it minimize or make a mockery of international law?
Well, you know, this is one of the issues that we're seeing. When he acts, and his supporters say he's got a grand strategy and he's playing, you know, five-dimensional chess and the rest of the world can't catch up to it. Others would say this is just a off-the-cuff foreign policy activities. But the U.S. has not been, you know, terribly concerned about outcries about violating international law, except when it appears as if, for example, the ICC is going after allies or, you know, people close to Trump. But Trump is in his own element, and what is there to stop him, I think, is the key question.
So what is the future of international law? Are we still going to subscribe to whatever international law says, or does the example of Trump actually present us with a scenario that, like I say, makes a mockery of international law and what it stands for?
Right. That's the question. And it's going to remain unanswered until there is some type of flashpoint, until there's some type of situation that brings it to a point where those two dynamics clash, and we'll see what the result would be. I mean, are we on a collision course for that? I don't know. It's possible, but there's nothing at this point that would is an impediment to Trump doing what he wants to do with his foreign policy and his foreign activities. And I think that is going to be a question we'll probably see brought to the fore in the next couple of years, I would think.
Well, if you and I are, well, I hope you'll be around. I was going to say, if you and I are still around, we'll chat about that in a couple of years. But
let's hope.
Let's hope. John Day, U.S. Attorney at Law, thank you so much for that insight and joining us here on the Home One. We really appreciate
thank you.
It.